Welcome to Torat Imecha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Amy Horowitz, and this week we'll be learning Parshios Matos Masai. This week's set of Parshios brings Sefer Bamidbar to a close and rounds out many of the themes that we've discussed over the course of the past several weeks. Thinking back to the beginning of the Sefer, we discussed the census that seemed to be unprompted. We mentioned the idea suggested by Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch that the lesson of that census was finding the balance between being an individual and being part of a community. Here in Parshas Matos, that balance is tested by the tribes of Reuven and Gad, who ask Moshe for permission to settle in the Eiver HaYarden, the land adjacent to but outside the boundaries of Israel. Thinking about the request, it seems as bold and as audacious as the demand made by the Bnos Tzlafchad or the argument of Korach. The Jews have been traveling towards the Promised Land for the past 40 years, and they've been dreaming of fulfilling this promise for several hundred years more. Now that they're finally about to enter, why would Reuven and Gad suddenly decide that they're happy enough settling outside the borders of the land? Moshe's response is also perplexing. Moshe's initial response is angry, but then he concedes to their request and gives them permission to settle in the Eiver HaYarden under certain conditions. Why would Moshe allow this to happen, considering everything that has happened over the past 40 years? Let's consider a few different approaches to this episode, and we'll start with a basic understanding. Based on the simple pshat of the psukim, Reuven and Gad make their request because they are the tribes that have the most sheep and cattle, and the land outside of Israel seems particularly well-suited for grazing. This request seems reasonable, yet Moshe reacts, at least initially, with anger. Again, based on a simple reading of the psukim, Moshe is concerned that the tribes of Reuven and Gad are reopening an old wound, repeating the same mistake of the Meraglim. According to the Ramban, Moshe is worried that the request made by these two tribes is stemming from their fear of entering the land, a fear brought on by the Meraglim's report from 39 years earlier. Moshe hears the request to settle outside the land as another rejection of Eretz Yisrael, and he's worried that their rejection of the land will once again influence the rest of Bnei Yisrael to be afraid of the land as well. He obviously can't let history repeat itself here. But once Reuven and Gad demonstrate their willingness and readiness to enter the land and help their brothers fight, Moshe understands that they are not driven by the fear instilled by the spies. The spies announced, "Lo nuchal la'alot," we can't possibly conquer the land. And Reuven and Gad proclaim, "Anachnu nechalitz," we will be chalutzim, we'll lead the rest of the tribes into battle and conquer the land. This satisfies Moshe's concerns. As long as this is not another Chet HaMeraglim, as long as the people don't read Reuven and Gad's request as fear of entering the land, Moshe is willing to allow them to ultimately return to the Eiver HaYarden and settle there with their flocks. A medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah hints to an alternate approach to this whole episode. The perek opens by mentioning the large amount of cattle held by the tribes of Reuven and Gad. If we read the opening psukim of Perek Lamed Bet very carefully, we'll notice that the first pasuk lists Reuven first, followed by Gad, while the very next pasuk switches the order, listing Gad before Reuven. The Ramban explains the reason for the switch. He says that although Reuven should, as the oldest, be listed before God as in the first pasuk, the Torah switches the order because God owned more cattle than Reuven. So while the first pasuk mentions Reuven first out of respect, the second pasuk mentions God first because he's wealthier than his brother. But why would the Torah focus here on wealth, which is not an objective Torah value or a good reason for God's precedence? Again, reading the psukim carefully reveals something interesting. The tribes of Reuven and Gad ask first to build pens for their flocks, and only afterwards do they mention building cities for their children. This is the Torah's way of telling us that they cared more about their possessions than about their families. Switching the order of how the tribes are mentioned and putting the wealthier tribe of Gad before Reuven is a red flag for us to notice that this request was motivated by a desire for more wealth. The Torah is trying to tell us that these two tribes had mixed up priorities, emphasizing materialism and monetary gain. And in his response to their request, Moshe demonstrates his disapproval of their mistaken priorities by telling them, "Benulachem arim letapchem ugdeirot letzonchem." First build cities for your families and then pens for your sheep. In other words, Moshe switches the order of the request back to the way it should have been, with the children and families coming first before the sheep and cattle. It's an elegant and subtle form of rebuke. Moshe firmly reminds them of what's actually important, and it seems that they get the message. In their response back to Moshe, the two tribes commit to following Moshe's instructions to the letter. They say, "Tapenu neshenu miknenu v'chol behemtenu yihiyusham be'arei ha-gilad." Our children and our wives and our flocks will remain in the Eiver HaYarden, finally putting their wives and families first. Message received, but it seems that the damage is already done. The Medrash we mentioned that was the basis for this whole approach explains, based on a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, that the tribes of Reuven and Gad, along with the half-tribe of Manasseh, were eventually the first to be exiled from the land of Israel because of their greed and materialism. A third approach to understanding this episode is offered by the Or HaChaim. He notes that in their request to settle in the Eiver HaYarden, Reuven and Gad basically don't mention Hashem at all, other than one tangential reference they make to support their argument to settle outside the boundaries of Israel. The Or HaChaim isn't the only one to pick up on this omission. Moshe seems to notice it too. And concerned that Reuven and Gad are trying to distance themselves from Hashem with their request to remain outside the land of Israel, he subtly pushes the God agenda by purposely referring to Israel as the land that Hashem gave you multiple times in his response. But Reuven and Gad don't seem to get it, because they continue to lobby for their request without mentioning Hashem even once. So Moshe tries again. He ups the ante by mentioning Hashem 6 times in a section of 4 psukim, in an effort to get Reuven and Gad to realize that this is not a conversation that can be had without bringing Hashem into it. And finally, it works. Moshe reminds these two tribes that their actions are at all times lifnei Hashem, and they finally respond that they'll fight for the land of Israel alongside their brothers and lifnei Hashem, using Moshe's exact words to demonstrate that they understood his point. Whatever they do, whether they settle inside the land or just outside its borders, their decisions have to be made with Hashem in mind. Only once Moshe is convinced that they really get it does he concede to their request for land in the Eiver HaYarden. But even then, he concedes cautiously. At the beginning of Parshas Maasai, when Moshe sets aside the 6 Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge, he designates 3 inside the land of Canaan and 3 in the land settled by Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Manasseh. Maybe Moshe gives these 3 tribes as many Arei Miklat as their counterparts inside the borders of the land because he trusts them just a little bit less when it comes to their ability to live a life that is lifnei Hashem in all of their actions. One last possible approach to this whole episode focuses on the conditions Moshe makes for the tribes of Reuven and Gad to settle in the Eiver HaYarden. In response to the two tribes' very definitive statement that they would not be inheriting land inside the boundaries of Israel, Moshe gives them one condition. If you cross over and fight with the rest of Bnei Israel, then you can live in the land you desire. But if you don't cross over into Canaan and fight, then you can't have land in the Eiver HaYarden, and you'll have to settle inside Canaan instead. But is that a punishment? If you don't keep your end of the deal, I'll punish you by forcing you to settle in the land of Israel? The fact that Moshe poses that as a threat reveals that the tribes of Reuven and Gad must indeed have viewed living inside the land of Israel as a punishment. It's hard for us to imagine someone being so opposed to living in Israel that they'd feel threatened by the suggestion. But as crazy as it sounds, I guess if you don't like ice cream, then you would view being forced to eat ice cream as a terrible punishment. So the tribes of Reuven and Gad seemingly really do not want to join the rest of their brothers and live inside the land of Israel, so much so that they view the possibility of being forced to settle inside the land as a punishment. And Moshe views their aversion to settling inside the land as separatist, as a rejection not only of the land, but of the rest of the 12 tribes. Perhaps this is why Moshe ultimately allows them to settle outside the boundaries, only by joining them to the half-tribe of Manasseh. If we were looking at a map of the tribes' portions of the land, we'd see right away what Moshe had in mind. The tribe of Manasseh settles half in and half out of the land of Israel, creating a bridge between the tribes of Reuven and Gad outside of the borders, and the rest of the tribes within the boundaries of the land. With this bridge in place, Reuven and God can live where they'd like while remaining connected to their brothers and their religion. The events of Sefer Yehoshua prove that Moshe's fear was shared by the rest of the Jewish people. The tribes of Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe do indeed lead their brothers into battle, help them conquer the land, and wait until the other tribes are settled before returning to their wives and families, waiting for them in the Eiver HaYarden. But when they finally make that journey back to their new territory, they do something strange. They build a Mizbeach on the western banks of the Jordan River, just inside the borders of Israel. The rest of Bnei Yisrael are immediately suspicious. Is this Mizbeach an altar to Avodah Zarah? Is that why Reuven and Gad wanted to separate themselves from the rest of the nation? Because they wanted space to return to idolatrous practices? Or is this Mizbeach an altar to Hashem that foreshadows the two golden calves that will be set up as shrines by Yeravam many hundreds of years later? If so, does this mean that Reuven Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe won't be joining their brothers in Shiloh for the Shalosh Regalim each year? The timing of the request and the Mizbeach built by these 2.5 tribes is actually quite sensitive. As the Jews prepare to enter and then ultimately settle the land of Israel, they're also preparing to be separate for the first time, each tribe inhabiting its own territory, a huge difference from the camp they formed in the Midbar. Reuven and Gad's request adds to the tension they must already have been feeling, and the separate Mizbeach might be the straw that broke the camel's back. What's beautiful about this is that Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe explain to the rest of the nation that this fear of being separate is exactly why they built their controversial Mizbeach in the first place. They also were worried about losing their connection to the rest of the Jewish people, and they built the Mizbeach to serve as a point of connection, another bridge to keep them tied to the rest of their family. Moshe insists on the tribe of Menashe serving as a bridge, and the 2.5 tribes respond by strengthening their connection with this Mizbeach. This reassures the other tribes that although they're blessed to finally be spreading out in their own land, they will still maintain the unity they established in their wilderness encampment. The bonds of brotherhood are intact, and the tribes will stay unified at heart, despite the new distance between them. This unity is so much a part of the experience of our national homeland. David HaMelech describes Yerushalayim as a city that unifies its people, and the Beis HaMikdash would ultimately become a gathering place at our center, mimicking the placement of the Mishkan at the center of our camp. And ultimately, as we're commemorating during this period of the 3 weeks, it would be the loss of this unity in the form of the split kingdom and then Sinas Chinam that would destroy our two temples and cause us to be exiled from the land. Perhaps the message of our Parshios and of Sefer Bamidbar as a whole is that no matter how big and widespread our nation becomes, we have to view ourselves as part of Machane Yisrael, the original Jewish camp that unified around the Mikdash in its center. If we train ourselves to think that way, and we remain focused on Jewish unity as our goal, perhaps we will already have taken the first steps towards rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash and returning to our home. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and thank you for learning Parshios Matas Masai and Sefer Bamidbar with the OU Women's Initiative.